This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 115.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview Lisa Smith-Batchen, who became the first woman to complete the Badwater Quad, which means running the Badwater Ultra Marathon back-to-back four times. This conversation is like a case study on mental toughness. And for this episode's quick tip, we tell you about a foot cream that prevents blisters. And to get our help with your training for a marathon or half marathon, find out how to become a member of the Academy by visiting our website and clicking on the Join Now page. So what's up, Angie? Good to be behind the microphone with you. We're just sort of laying low right here in the summer heat, August. Haven't gone anywhere in a while. Haven't done anything too stupendous.
Our kids just went back to school this week, so we're getting adjusted to the new routine.
Yes. Keeping up with our training for our fall marathons, Chicago and Marine Corps. Looking forward to that. I'm up to a 16-miler on my long run. What are you up to?
I did 18 last weekend.
And you and I signed up for a half marathon in September. So, a little something to look forward to. We're running the City of Roses half marathon in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which is not too far from where we live.
Yeah, I can't really tell you the last time I've done a half marathon. It's probably been a couple of years.
They're so beneath you.
No, it's just like if I have the chance, I would rather do a full marathon. So
I love half marathons.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because when I ran this one the first time, it was when I was training for my second marathon. And it felt like a really big deal. Let me just tell you that. So I'm excited to go back and...
And maybe me and you will get to run together.
Maybe so.
That doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. You'll probably leave me in the dust, though, which is fine.
That's all right. Well, we'd like to take a quick second to welcome some new members to the Academy. Kimberly from California, Emily from Alabama, Elizabeth from Connecticut, May Reed from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Billy from Pennsylvania, Laura from Illinois, Nicole from Colorado, Kevin from Georgia, Tanya from Minnesota, Amanda from Mississippi, and Christopher from Pennsylvania. We are so honored to have these folks as Academy members and look forward to hearing about their progress.
That's right. We'd like to say congratulations to Edith, who did a sprint triathlon in Oslo, Norway last weekend. Before the race, she had reached out in our private Facebook group, and she said, "Hi, guys, please transfer some mental strength that I can use during the swim leg of my triathlon tomorrow. I'm still not a very good swimmer, and the temps in the lake we are swimming in is probably going to be too high to wear a wetsuit, which means that I have to rely on my own poor buoyancy. I am focusing hard to keep their panic away. Online registration buttons should come with an alarm signal to make us think twice before pushing." And then a few days later, we got an update on a race, and she said, "The triathlon was a good experience. All the pep talks from the MTA members helped me to keep my spirits up and finish the swimming leg strong. Thanks a lot to all of you. The biking and running were not as mentally challenging. For the first time, I felt like I had control through the whole triathlon, and it was a blast. I told myself that this was my last triathlon, but I think I've changed my mind."
Well, that's good to hear that she had a great experience and all of her fears washed away. Isn't that how it is most of the time?
I think you learn that your fears are not as powerful as, you know, maybe we make them out to be when you can overcome them and work past them. So, yeah, very proud of Edith for having a strong triathlon there and overcoming her fear of open water swims. It's a big deal.
That's right. Now we're going to help Angie overcome her fear of the water and boats.
Yes.
She doesn't even like being on a boat. Edith, so.
Not with you, at least.
Not with me in the driving it. We'll work on that one.
This next note comes from Liz. She said, "I recently ran the hardest 14 miles of my life. My legs felt like lead, and I don't know what was wrong with my head. The weather was perfect, the scenery was gorgeous, but it was a major battle beyond mile 8. I almost quit at mile 9, but my stubborn streak kicked in. I finished, not even in the neighborhood of my goal pace, but I pushed through. I was feeling really discouraged until I realized I've only been running distances greater than 13 miles for a year. Even though I still feel a little disappointed, I would have been way more disappointed had I allowed myself to quit." And then she gave us an update. She said, "A week ago I had a surprisingly rough 14-miler. However, today's 16-miler went by like a dream. I think morning long runs are an essential thing for me when training in the summer. The only downside was that I ran from my work office for a change of scenery, and I forgot a change of clothes, so I had to work in my running clothes. I'm lucky to have a job where I drive a lot, and I don't have to worry much about fashion standards. But it was definitely a stinky, chafy work day.
You know, I have long runs that I feel like I just don't have any energy at all. And if you're not careful, you can tell yourself that, oh, you're just not cut out to be a long-distance runner, and every long run's going to be that way. But don't tell yourself that, because it's not true.
That's right. You'll get past it. You'll build mental toughness. Your physical strength will build, and then you'll have those breakthrough runs where everything seems right in the world.
So everybody has rough runs.
That's right. We all do.
And once in a while, everybody's got to go to work in their running clothes.
Wow, that's would be a rough day. So we're proud of you, Liz, for sticking it through and having to smell yourself all day.
And once you sweat out a shirt one time, like, it's forever ruined. You know, it doesn't take much for it to reactivate the...
Right.
Man. We also like to give a shout out to our friend Eric Strand, who is running the Leadville Ultra Trail Marathon tomorrow. This will be his third Leadville race, so way to go, Eric, and we know you're going to do great.
Yeah, we said we'd send him any extra oxygen we had here, so hopefully it helps.
That's right. Well, in this episode, we're going to talk with Lisa Smith-Batchen. She is a well-known ultramarathoner. She's done some amazing things. She's won the Badwater Ultramarathon before. She's also won the Marathon des Sables in Africa, across the Sahara Desert. Just going into this episode, it's good for all of us, Angie, to know what the Badwater Ultramarathon is, because Lisa has just completed four in a row. So,
right.
Can you like take a quick second and just explain what Badwater is?
The Badwater Ultramarathon is 135 miles through Death Valley, California, in the month of July. There's incredible elevation changes as you basically start at the lowest point and then you end up near Mount Whitney. Yeah, just the thought of doing one Badwater is more than most people would ever accomplish in their lifetime. And to do it four times in a row is incredibly mind-blowing.
Yes.
So, yeah.
She's the only woman to have done it. Some men have done it. Marshall Ulrich, who we've had on this podcast, has done the Badwater Quad, and Lisa crewed for him. But she'll talk about him and get into why she decided to take this on and how it went. Lisa did the quad in order to raise money for a charity that provides good, clean water to people in parts of the world where they don't have access to that. Something else that I think you're really going to benefit from, you that are listening, is just hearing her talk about mental toughness and how she sees herself when she's out there running. She's going to talk about being a peaceful warrior, which sounds kind of corny at this point, but just wait till she starts talking about it. You'll see that it is getting to this place of transcendence when you're out there running that enables you to enjoy every mile. And that's something that we all need to learn how to do if we're going to be long-distance runners, even if we're just doing a half marathon or a full marathon, and maybe you have no intention of ever running as far as Lisa has, but yet you're going to need mental toughness to take on the challenges that you're going to face. We know you're going to enjoy this episode. Let's go ahead and get into it right now.
Oh, I am a difference maker. Oh, I am the only one that speaks to him. And I am the friendliest of friends of God.
All right, we're on the podcast today with Lisa Smith-Batchen. She recently completed the Badwater Quad, 584 miles through Death Valley, California. And this was done in the month of July when temperatures reach in the 120s. And Lisa is an accomplished marathoner, an ultramarathoner, and triathlete. She's also a running coach, wife, mother, and lives in Driggs, Idaho. And her husband are the race directors of the Jackson Hole Marathon in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So Lisa, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. What a great introduction. Boy, I'm honored.
Well, I'm sure we could have gone on and on, but you've definitely accomplished a lot in your life. And so for those who aren't familiar with your running background, just tell us a little bit about how you got started running ultramarathons.
My first ultramarathon was in 1995 when I did the first Eco Challenge, which was in Utah, and I ended up on a team with my good friend Marshall Ulrich, who is a very well-known ultramarathoner himself. And he said to me, you know, you ought to do Badwater. And I said, what's a Badwater? I'd never heard of anything over running a marathon at that time. And that was in April. And I found myself in July at the starting line of the Badwater 135. That July in 1995, and that was my introduction and first race for into ultra marathoning, and I haven't turned, you know, haven't anything since then except for go the distance, which I absolutely love.
Well, that's kind of like being baptized by fire, going from a marathon to Badwater, and obviously.
Yeah, you said it. It absolutely was.
Obviously, you didn't let it deter you, and you know, went on to run it. Have you finished it 10 times now?
Well, I get credit for it for 9 times, but I have definitely done it 10 times. I got an IV in 1999. I went back and finished the race, but I didn't get credit for it. So I give myself credit, but the race doesn't.
Right.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, just the what you accomplished this summer has got to count for at least a couple times, you know?
Yeah.
I count it, so, you know, who's counting, right?
Exactly.
So we want to hear all about the Badwater Quad. We did have you on the podcast last year, and you were going to attempt the Badwater Quad, but weren't able to do that. Can you tell us kind of what happened last year?
You know, last year I definitely wasn't ready for it. It was kind of rushed, and I really, really wanted to do it, and I asked my friend, Sister Mary Beth, she would pray about it and what she thought about my doing it last year. And she wrote back and said, absolutely not this year. Go next year because I can go next year. And I thought, you know, I want to go this year. It was like that ego part of me, that part saying, no, I'm going anyway. And it was very rushed. We were moving into a new house. There was just, my training wasn't anywhere where it should have been. And my crew kind of didn't get along very well right from the beginning. They're all wonderful people, but it, you know, right from the get-go, there were some issues with crew people, and you know, it was just wasn't meant to be. That's how I look at it. And this year was meant to be. I'm grateful that I had another opportunity to go back, and I did it very, very different. And I when I went into it, I felt, you know, immense confidence that I was ready and that the timing was all right.
I read the LA Times story, which was all about this race. And so I got a couple questions that came up while I was reading the story. The story mentions that you trained by dragging a tire through the Tetons. So pretty gnarly training there. Can you give us like a look into how you trained for the Badwater Quad and what all that looked like?
No, I've been pulling a tire for at least 28 years. I think I'm probably one of the first ultramarathoners, you know, pulling a tire. Even before I was doing ultramarathoners, I was pulling a tire for training. Mm-hmm. And it's such a great tool to use. I mean, around here, some people train horses by pulling tires. And why do they train a horse to pull a tire? It really works in keeping you upright and works on the front and the back of your core, front and back of your legs, even if you don't have any hills. So, you know, some people use parachutes, they use backpacks, they use all kinds of things, but, you know, pulling a tire, it makes perfect sense to me because of the strength that it gives you. Mm-hmm. And I know for sure at mile 500 that all of my tire pulling absolutely came into play. I climbed better than I've ever climbed before. There was 96,000 feet of elevation change in the quad.
Wow.
I felt my power walking was never less than 3.5-4 miles an hour, even when I was tired. I attribute that to the training that I did, pulling a tire, and, you know, I really am a believer of working on your weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
The things that you don't enjoy so much, the things that you know you can improve at in your training, and take your weaknesses and try to make them a strength. And that's what I focused on, and it worked.
How do you train for the heat?
The heat, you know, I somehow have always been able to adapt to the heat. I don't know what it is about me. I live in right outside of Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where, you know, it might be 80 degrees, but we have no humidity at 6,500 feet, so it's kind of cool, crisp air here. The only way I trained for the heat this year was I would wear like a ski jacket sometimes to train in, to sweat more. But I really went about it this year with an incredibly different mental focus and knowing that part of the mental fortitude and the ability to adapt to your surroundings and change and the elements is incredibly mental. As long as you, you know, as long as you're taking care of the physical needs, you know, drinking water and staying, you know, cool down and, you know, not taking that heat for granted, wearing the right clothing, there's so much that goes into doing it the right way. I'm not saying, you know, I definitely recommend heat training for people. I didn't have that opportunity to heat train here. I don't have a sauna. I didn't have any of that to train with.
Now, the story that we mentioned earlier in the LA Times mentions that you meditate. Now, was this just a word the reporter chose, or do you have a regular practice of meditation?
You know, I wouldn't say I have a regular practice of meditation. I started to try to, like, take on a new attitude, not so much just in life, but, you know, how was I going to go about this differently than I did the year before, differently than I did any other journey that I've done. And a lot of it came with being in a very calm state of mind and, you know, like a meditative state. So I would work on that in all of my training runs of just, you know, stay calm, stay in the moment, stay focused, you know, enjoy this, even if it's a 60-mile-an-hour headwind in your face. And just, you know, the meditation training and using it better everything in my life and everything around me. So I don't sit in a room and meditate. I use the running as meditation.
So you were really focused on keeping your headspace, I guess, positive mantras and things during your training, and then you had those, you know, that practice, I guess, in your mind as you went into this adventure.
I did, you know, and for almost the entire time, I very, very seldom feel like I lost that space that I had trained myself to do. And it was the best part of the journey for me to finish feeling the way, you know, the way that I really wanted it to be, which it doesn't always, not always the case.
Right. Did you have any mantras or thoughts that really helped you stay focused on your goal? And were there any low spots where, you know, you just kind of stepped back and thought, I can't continue or anything?
I never, ever thought I can't continue. I will be honest, when I was almost finished with the first double, the first, you know, the first 300 or, you know, almost 300 miles of it, I took two of my crew members off to the side and I said, you know, I think I might just go home. And they're like, what do you mean? And I said, you know, I'm feeling really satisfied. I feel satisfied. I'm happy. Nothing hurts. And, you know, everything's good. And nobody ever stops doing something when they feel good, do they? But it's always stopping when you feel miserable or something hurts. And I had just gotten a text message from my mother saying, haven't you done enough? You know, you've got nothing to prove. You know, I wish you'd stop. I think you've done enough. And so I was hearing this mother, you know, in my mind thinking, you know, okay, maybe I've done enough. And, you know, it became this like battle in my mind. And I thought, yeah, maybe I have done enough. You know, maybe I, and they were like, what are you talking about? So I finished the double. And then during that 17 miles of my finishing the double, after I told those two crew members that, I really made the decision that, no, of course I'm continuing. Are you kidding? That's why I'm here. I would never live with myself if I went home and said, oh, I was satisfied with the double. Although at that moment I was. Everything felt good. Nothing was hurting. And I really believed, like, my gosh, when do any of us stop doing something when you're feeling great? You know, and satisfied. It's usually the other way around. So, you know, I turned it around quickly and came back and I said, of course we're going. And they're like, thank God. You know, I said, of course we're going. That's why I'm here. That's what we're here for. And my commitment, that was the only time I faltered. I never thought I couldn't do it. Never said, I'm not doing this. I can't stand this. That never crossed my mind. What stayed true to my mind was the commitment that I made. You know, and then I really realized that 17 miles of thinking was the commitment that the team made, the crew made. They, you know, left their families, their jobs, their, you know, everything to come in and help me through this. And, you know, what about my commitment to them? That was really powerful, let alone the cause that we're raising the money for. You know, I've run with a broken foot before. If something broke, of course, I wasn't willing to do. It wasn't like it at any cost. That was I going to finish this thing. It was, I wanted to be healthy and happy and stay in a really good place. Of course, everything hurts at certain times, but it wasn't a place where I was willing to put myself, my life in jeopardy.
Right. Now, it sounds like you really had an amazing support team and crew this time around. Talk a little bit about what makes a good support crew member for an event like this.
Well, you know, last year, everybody was a great support crew, a great team member. It's, you know, just sometimes people's personalities don't mesh when you put people together. I have nothing but the greatest admiration and respect for all of them last year. And, you know, and I take my own responsibility for maybe some of the right people weren't in the right place. This year, it just really came together. I had three people on my crew that have crewed me several times. They know me really well. I consider them very, very good friends, and, you know, they could look at me and know what I needed. Hmm. You know, so that was really important to me, to have these people that knew what I needed. And actually, two of them were on the team last year. And then I had one student of mine who lives in the Cayman Islands who just really, really wanted to be a part of the journey, the experience. She had none of her own expectations that she was going to do 300 miles with me. It was all about, you know, helping the cause and being there and learning. And she was incredible. Then I had another crew member, Vincent, who actually invented the product Trail Toes. I don't know if you've heard about that. Trail Toes, which is this lubricant that you put all over your feet or anywhere that you're going to chafe.
Wow.
And he is a major in the Army. And I'd never met him before, but I had researched him, and he had helped some other runners do some really cool things. John Sharp, who did 200 miles across Texas, and, you know, he came with an orthopedic background, a medical background, and just all he cared about was, I just want to help you get to the finish. And he was incredible. And I mean, I had four blisters. That's it.
Wow.
When anything went wrong medically, or I had diarrhea for 24 hours, it was awful. Mm. You know, he was making rice for me, and, you know, it was just so incredible to have these people, their knowledge, their expertise, and, you know, their care about me. I mean, they cared about me, but they cared about the cause. And, you know, they cared enough to keep caring, which makes for a huge, amazing crew. There was no fighting, no animosity. They actually had fun. I mean, they were dancing in the streets, and when I was, you know, they'd go a mile ahead of me, and they were just being creative with the foods they cooked up, and it was just so nice to see this group of people dedicating their lives to helping me and the cause. They were really having fun.
Now, let's talk about, for a couple minutes, Bad Water for Good Water, the cause that you were raising money for. Can you tell us, like, how much money you're able to raise and what the cause is all about?
Well, we feel confident to say that we're about up to $200,000. Money is being sent to Sister Mary Beth and being sent to us. Donations are still coming in today, which is great. I want everybody to know that the crisis is never going to be over unless we keep raising money. So, you know, the fact that I'm done running doesn't mean that you can't keep donating. And a lot of people are donating $5.84, which is awesome. 584 miles, $5.84. For many, many years, I've raised money for AIDS orphans in particular. An AIDS orphan is a child that has lost both parents due to war, or they've both died of AIDS. And most of these children, which there's thousands and thousands of them, we have built schools for. We feed them. We clothe them. We educate them. But unfortunately, many of them are still dying. And what hit me so hard one day was, you know, why are they still dying? And it just came down to the basic essential need in life is water. And people they're dying of polio now again because of bad water places. And, you know, how fortunate we are to be able to turn on the tap water or to take a shower, to brush your teeth or to buy a bottle of water or anything like that. Of how many people don't have that. And so it really became powerful to me that, you know, water, if we can get water to the places we're getting all these other things, the ones that are still dying, it's greater for them to survive. Because if you have clean water, lack of illness, you know what I mean? Then they can grow things. They can drink a glass of fresh water and not of water that they've actually urinated in and full of feces. And it's just disgusting when you think about it. So I did a lot of research on the water, and there's a lot of help out there. A lot of help, a lot of water, and there's water everywhere. There just has to be a way to get to the water.
Hmm. How can people get involved? What website do they need to go to?
Our website for this is www.badwater4goodwater.com. Okay. Badwaterforgoodwater.com. And, you know, in the four, that became the quad. It was the bad water for good water. It makes a lot of sense to me. And in the number four, I did four crossings for good water. And hopefully it'll continue. There's other people who came on board who said, oh, I want to keep running for the cause. And, you know, although they don't have to go to bad water to run, that's, you know, the name of it rings really true. We're trying to get bad water, turning it into good water.
I think that's perfect, because one of the basic elements of being able to run is having clean, drinkable water, you know, just the thirst that goes into...
Well, and how much water did I drink in Death Valley? I mean, I would have died. Two miles with no water, you don't make it.
Right.
You know, interesting enough, when I finished the quad, Vincent on my crew came up to me and he said, you know, I want you to do the last 2 miles by yourself and just, you know, really resonate with what you've done. And he handed me one bottle of water, and he said, will this be enough? And I said, yeah, it'll be enough. And it was about 10 o'clock in the morning. The sun was out. It was getting really, really hot. It was already about 120 degrees. When I crossed and I finished the quad, the bottle was empty. And I opened it, and I shook it, and I looked. The bottle was empty, and I thought, if I had to go 2 more miles without anybody here, nothing to help me, no water, I would die. And so it was so powerful to me to think, you know, yeah, I'll be okay with this water for 2 miles, but not for another 2 miles. And how many people, they walk 40 miles to go get water, you know, they don't make it. They die walking to get the water, to find the water. So it was really powerful for me to finish that way and hit hard that the cause is such a great one.
I can imagine how emotional it was at the finish line after running that many miles.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm still in this place of, I finished, I went back to Las Vegas, then I went out and crewed for somebody for the Badwater race, one of my students, Grant, who finished second, and then I'm driving home, I get a call about my father, 1 hour away from home, I couldn't wait to get home, the next morning I'm on a plane to Louisiana, where I just spent 2 weeks, and I just got home. So, to be quite honest, I'm really... Today, like talking to you sitting here for the first time, really just, I was in tears a few times, you know, today thinking about the entire journey, talking about it. And, you know, I was emotional when I finished, but it really, the sinking in of like this amazing group of people who did something extraordinary, it wasn't about me, never was about me. It was about a team of people, you know, doing something to help others. And that's the beauty of it. And that's what my dad did. You know, he passed away. He donated his body to science. He was so honored that he would be able to give back to those who helped him. And then he wanted to have donations made to the VA hospital, you know, for the homeless. So, you know, I kind of think, you know, geez, there's just such a similarity there of what my dad just did and what I did.
That's right. There's so many ways that we can all give, you know, in life and in death. And that's really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's really powerful, and it's all good. People are talented in all ways. It doesn't have to be running. It's anything. Play the violin. You can sew. You sing. You dance. I mean, if you want to help any kind of organization that's close to your heart, you do have a way to help. And it's not always about money. You know, you give of your time. The people on my team for the crew, they gave 14 days of their life to the cause and to helping, you know, this happen. Without them, it wouldn't have happened.
Let's talk about mental toughness here for a minute. You seem to embody mental toughness. Like, when I think of mental toughness, I think of you, Lisa. What have you learned after this Badwater quad? Did you learn something about mental toughness that you didn't know before?
You know, I absolutely did. I went into it with a different attitude, a different approach than I've ever done anything. You know, I do know that I have very strong mental toughness, and over the years, I've gotten stronger and stronger and stronger. My dad's favorite thing to always tell me was, gal, you got to be tough, tough, tough. And I thought, man, I'm tough, tough, tough. I'm tough enough. You know, I've got 3 older brothers, and and a sister, and I'm just tough. And sometimes you can be too tough or too hard on yourself. And the mental toughness part of it, I knew I'd have to be tough mentally to do what I wanted to do. So I decided to take a completely different approach of so many outside obstacles come in our way when we're doing anything, a 5K, a 10K, a triathlon, a marathon, anything that can get, you know, say on your nerves or be like, oh, you know, my right foot hurts or, oh, you know, my toe hurts or my knee hurts, and the distractions of making your mental fortitude sort of lose its balance, so to say. And, you know, that's happened to me many times, of just letting the foot pain get to me and just getting mad at it and, you know, just sucking up the energy that you can use in another way. So years ago, I read all of the books by Dan Millman, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and I watched the movie The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And Dan Millman, it's a true story about a gymnast. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
And I watched it again the last few years a few times. And then I started taking notes and listening to the things like, you know, being the master and being like in control of your own mind. And, you know, your mind permits what your body will do.
Hmm.
Absolutely. If your mind says your body's tired, you're tired. If your mind is in this space of gratitude and happy and can stay there, you will stay there. Your mind is incredibly powerful. So I watched the movie 4 times in a row before I left, although I had already grasped this attitude of saying, I'm going into this as a peaceful warrior. I want to be peaceful. I want to be calm. I want to be loving. I want to be committed, and I want to be content, and no ego involved. Like, this is not about me. Although we all have ego, obviously, right? We have an ego, but I didn't want, it wasn't about that. And I just wanted to take into the be peaceful, stay calm, stay in the moment, stay focused. When outside obstacles come your way, stay in those moments. Stay focused. Stay in that calm place. And I did it. And I worked on it, and I did it. And, it, you know, I was smiling a lot. I was singing a lot. I was happy a lot. You know, I was laughing at the 60-mile-an-hour headwinds and sandstorms. And, you know, there was moments where I was extremely just so exhausted. I just kept telling myself, stay in the calm, stay in the calm. I would repeat that over and over, stay in the calm.
Wow.
And it worked. Going up Mount Whitney twice, it worked. Just, you know, stay there. And it became a practice of meditation just to use the words, stay in the calm, stay in the moment. The moment is now. The moment is here. The moment is now. And just like every moment added up to a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles. But, you know, enjoying the surroundings instead of looking at them as a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enjoying the sandstorm, laughing at the sand, like taking in everything the desert had to give you, although it was so darn hard. Okay, it's 127 degrees, Lisa. You know, hey, that's great. You know, it was, I'm telling you, it will work for anybody and everybody.
This is really powerful stuff. It sounds like...
You know, it is. It's not, I never, ever, ever, the first time I'm going to be 54 that I took that approach from start to finish. My crew, who's crewed me several times before, the three of them kept saying, there's something so different about you. And I said, I'm a peaceful warrior. And one of them would laugh at me. And I said, that's true. I'm a peaceful warrior. And they said it more than a few times, like, there's something so different about you. I'm trying to stay taking that approach in everything these days. Like, the stressing less, everything just seems less, you know, because you can't control so much of the outside obstacles that come your way. You can really only control what you can. And at the end of the day, that's all you can do.
The title of the LA Times article was about you being a peaceful warrior. So this is all making sense to me now.
Well, you know, the LA Times, they came out and they followed us. They followed, you know, they were there for almost a day taking pictures and asking questions. And, you know, and they ran with me for several miles. And I think that the reason they decided to call it that was because they actually felt it and witnessed it and asked all the questions. And they were like, wow, you know, they got it. They got what I was talking about, and that they actually, the writer and the photographer, I believe they both go to Harvard, and they have one more year of college. I think they both leapt out of there with that that's how they were going to move through life now. But that's, hey, you know what? Oh, my gosh, this is great. So hopefully if it helped one person, I'll take it.
That's,
you know,
right. And what a great thing to grasp, you know, earlier in life.
Yeah.
And what a way to approach all the challenges that people have just by, you know, living. You're quoted, I think, in that article saying that your age is one of the reasons that you can do this event. Talk a little bit about what you meant by saying that.
Well, you know, the Badwater Quad, how I decided one day that I really wanted to do it, and I'll go back to my good friend Marshall Ulrich, because he is one of my greatest teachers and one of my greatest mentors. 15 years ago, I crewed him for the Badwater Quad, and he was the first person to ever do it, the Badwater Quad, and he, you know, as I'm crewing for him and watching him do this, I mean, to me, this man was absolutely Superman, and he still is.
Yes.
You know, Superman, superhuman, and thought, oh my God, you know, I couldn't believe what he did and what he was doing. And you know, never even at that time did I say, oh, this is something I want to do. At that time, I said, I could never do that. I could never do that. And as I, you know, as I got older, I really wanted to do the Badwater double. Then I decided I wanted to do something unique that no one did and run from Las Vegas to Mount Whitney. And then as the time went by, I started to think about the Badwater Quad because no woman had ever done it before. And I love doing things that someone else hasn't done and setting myself up for a challenge. And the reason I said that I'm at this age where I feel like I could do it was, I'll call it wise with wisdom. You know, I grew into the sport. I grew into my feeling that I could do this now. That, you know, I'm not superhuman. Marshall's not superhuman. We have capabilities of believing. And when you believe, you know, you can do.
Right.
Marshall's mental fortitude is incredible. And, you know, although a lot of people have it, they just... So that's kind of where I was at with that. Like, wise with the wisdom. I grew into the sport. I did the things that I knew would lead me up to that. There's no way I would have stepped up and done the Badwater Quad before I did the Badwater Double or before I did any of those other things. That gave me the confidence to feel like, all right, I think you can do this. So I wouldn't have been able to think that, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
That's awesome. So I want all of our listeners to really take hold of that. There's an advantage in marathoning and ultramarathoning to getting older because you are growing in mental toughness.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. I mean, the older that you get, the better you get. The wiser you get, the smarter you get. I mean, there's more information out there available for us than ever when it comes to running, nutrition, and, you know, everything. There's so much. I spoke to a new student today. He's 54 years old, just running 2 months ago. He signed up for the Marathon to Stop. That's going to be his first race.
Wow.
I mean, how cool is that? He's 54, and I'm like, that's extraordinary. I'm going to be 54, and, you know, I've already done a lot of that stuff. But, you know, age is not a limitation at all. If you take care of yourself, you do your homework, I mean, it just isn't. You can get better and better in this sport the older you get.
Two, I think that explains why you don't see a lot of teenagers doing marathons. You know, I've seen a couple, but mostly it is people who are old enough that they know how to push themselves through those difficult moments in life because they've learned by experience, whether it's going through college or raising a family or any other nasty stuff in life they've had to get through. So that mental toughness, that experience is there, whereas it might not be for a teenager quite yet.
There are some teenagers, you know, who are capable of doing extraordinary things too, and I think they come from good examples and, you know, good people to follow them. You know, teenagers, in my opinion, running marathons, I feel that, you know, we just need to be careful with kids with, you know, their growth plates and they don't get injured. And, you know, that running can be a lifetime sport. And if you do too much too soon, sometimes it just, by the time they hit college, they don't want to do it anymore. And, you know, I just hope that for any teenager listening that they, you know, just approach it cautiously, carefully, have fun with it. and know that it is a lifetime sport that you can do well into your 80s if you want to.
Right, like you talked about, it's a building block. You know, you train smart, you listen to your body, you take on one challenge, you know, you can incrementally build, and it's not like overnight you're taking on superhuman, you know, events, but like you said, it can be a great lifelong sport. And even for people over 50, you know, talk a little bit about how they can maximize their fitness while not succumbing to injury or overtraining, because that's important too.
Right, it is. It's very important. You know, I think just I'm one of those people who try to get, you know, students to work on their weaknesses, that will absolutely make you a stronger, you know, person and athlete. That, you know, oh, I'm running a hilly race, but I don't like to run hills. Well, you're not going to do very good in the race if you don't work on hills. And that if you actually take something, you know, not necessarily that you don't like, but it's a weakness because you're not spending time on it. And you turn that into something positive and turn it into something that you actually become good at. I mean, it's amazing what you can do. How many people over 50, oh, I don't stretch. Never stretched in my life. I can't stand stretching. Well, you know, but when you're 60, you'll probably say, I wish I would have stretched more.
Right.
Or I wish I would have tried yoga. Or I wish I would have, you know, drank more electrolytes. Or I wish I would have done something. If you're sitting back and you ever hear yourself saying, you know, I wish I would have or I wish I could have, you know, it's just not too late to start doing that now. You know, start today. Don't wait till next week or next Monday. Seems like everybody waits till Monday. Everybody waits till Monday. And then 20 years of Mondays have passed and you're still waiting. So get going today.
That's right. Everybody get down and downward dog right now.
That's right. Let's go.
You lead a yoga class in Jackson Hole, don't you?
Oh, no. I don't lead any yoga classes. Are you kidding? I love yoga. I do yoga, not nearly as much as I should. I actually teach 8 to 10 functional core training classes a week, boot camp. Yeah, kettlebells, medicine balls, all kinds of things like that. But I am a huge believer in yoga. There's a lot of yoga poses for runners that, in particular, help runners. I know a lot of people just don't believe in stretching, and I think when you hit a certain age, you will wish that you stretched.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those if you don't use it, you lose it type of things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a very good way to approach it.
Well, we've got a couple more questions, then we'll be done, but Lisa, it's not unusual for people to hallucinate during the Badwater Ultramarathon. Did you hallucinate at all during the quad?
Oh, yeah, I did. I had some great hallucinations. One in particular, I do think LA Times may have talked about, but it was so funny. I can laugh hysterically about it now. The crew kind of ran out of gas, and we had to wait 3 hours for them to get gas, and I was trying to stay, and I did, in my calm place of thinking I should grab a backpack, I should be on the road, I should be going, and knowing that it wasn't really safe for me, as tired as I was, to be out without a crew and just a backpack in the middle of Death Valley. So I went in and out of sleep for those 3 hours until we got gas and was time to go. The other crew had to get called by a satellite phone, and then we had to come back and get gas. That was in Panamint Springs, Death Valley, where they have a big roadrunner on the sign that says, Welcome to Panamint Springs.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm about to leave to go back on the road to start running, I was zigzagging because I was so sleep-deprived that I was completely out of it. And somehow that roadrunner jumped off the sign into the middle of the road and turned and looked at me. He was like this big hopping bird, and he turned and looked at me, and he goes, beep, beep, I'm the roadrunner. Catch me if you can. And I started running down the road yelling at him, going, I'm the roadrunner. I'm the roadrunner. Beep, beep to you, too. Get back on your sign. And this went on for, like, at least 3 miles, and he goes, I'm the roadrunner. And I said, I've got a 500-mile lead on you, you little S-H-I-T. You know, and it was so real to me. It was so real to me, so vivid.
Wow.
You know, he's bouncing up and down on the road, and his head is moving, and he kept turning around at me, beep, beep. And, you know, and then he turned around and went back and jumped on the sign, and there he left. But,
wow,
you know, my crew saw it. They were hysterically laughing. I was hysterically laughing. I knew I was hallucinating, but I was in it and enjoying it, and it was funny, and I couldn't get myself out of it. So that bird, it was so real. So, yes, it does happen. It's sort of like free drugs, I guess.
The human brain is amazing.
Yeah, the human brain is amazing. So literally that guy got me 3 miles down the road, and I kept going and feeling good.
But,
you know, that is a time I will never forget. It was just so funny.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you, Lisa. Can you tell us really quick about the Jackson Hole Marathon that you guys do?
Yeah, that would be great. We actually got voted as one of the best, prettiest marathons in this August Runner's World issue. Our races are all very, very family-friendly. We have the Jackson Hole Half and Full Marathon on August 30th this year. So if you're looking for a Wyoming event, you should absolutely be coming to ours. It's so beautiful.
Hmm.
It's such a beautiful place to come to the Tetons.
Oh, it is, definitely.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
We've
gorgeous
been there.
Area.
And,
you know, and if anyone has any questions about it or anything, you know, feel free. You can contact me on Facebook. You can email me, lisa@dreamchaserevents.com. I'm online a lot, and I'm always happy to answer, you know, answer any questions for anybody.
Wow, that's very kind. All right, that's lisa@dreamchaserevents.com.
Dreamchaserevents.com.
Awesome. You guys put on a 100-miler also, don't you?
We do. We put on a 50 and a 100-miler that is point-to-point. It starts in West Yellowstone in Montana. Then
nice.
You go into Wyoming, and you finish in Idaho. And that is September 20th.
Wow.
And you amazing. Can have a crew or use the aid stations and drop bags. It's a great event. I love the fact that it's point-to-point, and you're just running right with the Tetons in your face the whole, most of the way. It's a beautiful course. And we also have a 32-hour cutoff.
That's very generous. Wow.
At 100.
That's great.
It's pretty good. I mean, you can walk 3 miles an hour and finish.
Yes.
Yes.
Someday, Angie,
so
we'll
no
have to
excuses.
Take that on.
Yeah, I would
no
love
excuses.
To do that.
No excuses.
All right. Well, congratulations, Lisa, on finishing the Badwater Quad and inspiring all of us and the money that
you've
been able to raise for good water. And that's just truly awesome. And we hope that the project keeps going forward full steam ahead.
I do, too. And thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We'll include links on our blog so that people can check out Bad Water for Good Water and also the Jackson Hole Marathon, too.
Yep.
That would be terrific. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for talking to us. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good day. Take care.
You too.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lisa Smith Batchen. Thank you, Lisa, if you're listening, for letting us interview you again. And you're always welcome here on the MTA podcast. You are truly an inspiration, so rock on.
That's right. Yeah, I just really, her interview and talking to her came at a really good time for me because I was kind of in a stress vortex just with a lot on my plate and recently injuring my lower back and, you know, some frustrations like that. And it just really helped me to realize that, you know, you can look at it in a different way and try to center yourself and find that inner calm. And by doing that, you can get through anything in life. And I think just developing mental toughness is so important no matter what you're going through in life, whether it's a race or just the daily challenges that we all have.
I like what she said about finding that happy place, that carefree place in your mind. And I imagine that it also worked for her leading up to this event because there's a lot of planning. I can imagine a lot of stress because, I don't know, for me, whenever, Angie, we're planning on going to a marathon and all the coordination that we have to do with our three kids and everything, I always feel a lot of stress, like just working everything out. And that's not good going into a marathon. I could see, though, how Lisa was able to perfect this inner peace even leading up to the Badwater. So she was in the right frame of mind when she started. How important is that, to be in the right frame of mind when you're on the starting line?
Definitely.
Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip, and we're just going to quickly tell you about actually a product that Lisa mentioned in the interview. That's where we got the idea. It is a cream that helps reduce or prevent or even, I guess, treat blisters, and it's called Trail Toes, trailtoes.com.
And I think you can use it for all different types of chafing prevention. So maybe for people who don't experience good results with something like Body Glide, then Trail Toes is kind of like the next level, the ultra chafing prevention and ultra blister prevention. So,
yeah, just looking at their website, it looks like it's really geared toward people doing extreme endurance events. Their website says phenomenal ultra extreme anti-friction foot and body products. So we thought we'd mention this if anyone is looking for some help with your blisters out there. This is a product that was developed by one of the crew members that crewed for Lisa and was in charge of her feet. He was on feet duty, I guess, which is important to have a foot person. So you can check it out at trailtoes.com. And if you'd like more information on running and marathon training, visit us at marathontrainingacademy.com, where you can get one of our training plans, find out how to become an academy member, also look at our eating plan for a fat-adapted diet, as well as many other stuff going on there. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You make it worth it to do what we do, and we want you to remember you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
I am on the fence about nearly everything I've seen, and I have felt the fire get put out by too much gasoline. We're all strangers passing through a place in town. Afternoon, life is but a vision in a window that we're peeking through. Helpless conversation with a man who says he cares a lot. It's a passive confrontation about who might throw a punch or not. We are all transgressors, we're all sinners, we're all astronauts. So if you're beating death, then raise your hand, but shut up if you're not. 'Cause I am different.